Chapter 2: What Olga Saw. Section 1: Arrival. Olga rushed to her neighbor's door, panic rising as the ambulance siren grew distant. Natasha opened it, still in her bathrobe. "Please, I need your help," Olga said quickly, her voice trembling. "Eugene's in the ambulance. I have to go. Can you take Zoe to school? Maybe watch Zoe after if I'm still in a hospital." Natasha nodded immediately, no questions asked. "Of course, I'll take her to school and keep her until you're back." Olga crouched to Zoe's level, gently brushing the tears from her face. "Sweetheart, I need you to stay with Natasha for a bit, okay? She's going to take you to school with Zach, just like usual." Zoe sniffled but nodded, still holding on to her mother. "Call the school office about the special circumstances," Natasha said softly as she took Zoe's hand. "Don't worry, I've got her." Olga nodded, feeling a brief moment of relief, and hurried out the door. The drive to the hospital was a blur, her hands on the wheel, her eyes wide but unseeing. She didn't cry. It was as though her body knew she had to stay sharp, as though the emotions were waiting, just out of reach. Olga's heart was pounding as she stepped through the sliding doors of Palisades Hospital, the sterile, bright lights of the emergency department blurring in her vision. She barely registered the sounds of bustling nurses and beeping monitors around her, focused only on the distant knowledge that Eugene was somewhere inside, unconscious, fighting for his life. A nurse met her near the entrance, her voice kind but firm. "Ma'am, may I have your name and ID, please?" Olga handed over her ID without a word, her hands trembling. The nurse quickly entered her details into the computer and then glanced up. "Do you have your husband's insurance information with you?" she asked, her tone clinical, almost distant. Olga looked for her purse, pulling up Eugene's insurance card. She handed it over, her mind still racing. "Is there any advance directive?" the nurse asked, her voice taking on a more serious tone now. "Any papers signed for end-of-life care or preferences? What should we do if there is permanent brain damage? Should we keep him on a machine?" Olga froze, the questions feeling like a punch to the gut. She had no idea. Her thoughts were a whirlwind of fear and confusion. Permanent brain damage? End-of-life care? She hadn't thought about any of this. "Eugene never signed anything. We never talked about it. He is only 42. "No," she whispered, her voice barely audible. We didn't. We don't have any papers." The nurse's eyes softened, sensing Olga's distress. "Okay, we'll note that. It's important to have that conversation when you can, but for now, we'll take care of him. We're going to do everything we can." Olga nodded numbly, her mind still digesting the enormity of the situation. The nurse continued with routine questions, asking if Eugene had any medical conditions or allergies, but all Olga could hear in her head were those words: permanent brain damage. Keep him on a machine. As they led her down a long hallway toward the ICU, the nurse continued speaking, but Olga's mind was elsewhere, the weight of the unknown pressing down on her like a heavy fog. What would Eugene want? Olga followed the nurse down the sterile corridor, her heart pounding in her chest with every step. The smell of antiseptic was sharp in the air, mixing with the sound of distant beeping machines and muffled voices. Her mind was a blur, still processing the chaos of the morning, the sight of Eugene falling unconscious, and how she had fought to keep him alive with CPR. But now she was here, in the hospital, in the ICU, and everything felt like it was happening too fast. The nurse stopped in front of a door and pushed it open. "You can see him now," she said softly. Olga hesitated for a moment before stepping into the room. The sight that greeted her nearly stopped her heart. Eugene lay still on the bed, his body covered with thick blankets that gave off an unusual chill. He was hooked up to multiple machines. Some were beeping steadily, others showed lines on a screen. The room was filled with the quiet hum of the machines, but all Olga could hear was the pounding of her own pulse in her ears. She moved closer to his side, but as she did, a wave of cold washed over her. His lips were gray, his skin pale and waxy. The warmth she had always associated with Eugene was absent, replaced by an unnatural stillness. She couldn't make sense of the man she had just been talking to, the one who laughed and joked, who moved with purpose, who was always present. Now, he lay there, unmoving, cold to the touch. The chill seemed to crawl under her skin. She shivered uncontrollably. It wasn't just the cold of the room. It felt like the very air had turned icy, as though the temperature of the room had dropped with Eugene's stillness. The sight of him, so lifeless under the blankets, sent an ache through her chest. He lay in the hospital bed like a statue under ice, silent, pale, his chest rising and falling with the hiss of the machine that breathed for him. Tubes ran from his arms, his throat. His skin looked thinner, almost translucent. His whole body was frighteningly cold. The cooling blanket lay across his chest like a weight of frost. And when Olga reached out to touch his hand during her brief visit, his skin felt not like skin at all, but like porcelain. The nurse, standing a few steps back, noticed the shiver and gave a soft, reassuring smile. "It's part of the cooling treatment," she said gently. "We're lowering his body temperature to help protect his brain while we stabilize him." Olga didn't respond, her eyes locked on Eugene's face. It was hard to see him like this. Was he still in there? She thought. Would he come back to me? After a long moment, the nurse gently placed a hand on her shoulder. "We'll give you some time later, but I need to take you to the waiting area now." Olga's legs felt heavy as she finally tore her gaze away from Eugene's still form. The nurse guided her out of the room, and they walked silently down the hall to a small, separate waiting room. The door closed softly behind them, and Olga collapsed into a chair, her hands trembling. The room was small, with just a few chairs and a table, the soft hum of fluorescent lights overhead. The cold still clung to her skin, making her shiver as she sat there, alone with her thoughts. The weight of the situation pressed down on her chest, the questions swirling in her mind. Was Eugene going to wake up? What would happen next? Dr. Kumar, the ICU cardiologist, entered the room with a calm presence. He had seen this type of situation many times, but his approach was always the same, gentle, reassuring, and focused. He pulled up a chair next to Olga, offering a quiet smile before speaking. "Olga, I know this is incredibly overwhelming for you," Dr. Kumar began, his voice warm but steady. "I want to explain the steps we're taking for Eugene to give you some clarity. You're not alone in this, and we're doing everything we can to help him." Olga nodded, grateful for his calmness. "First, when someone goes into cardiac arrest, like Eugene did, it means the heart stops beating, and circulation stops too," he explained gently. "Without blood flow, the brain and other organs don't get oxygen, and that can lead to serious damage if not addressed quickly." He paused, allowing her to absorb this. She took a slow, deep breath, trying to steady herself. "Right after the arrest, you initiated CPR. That was critical because you kept blood circulating to the brain, and if done quickly, it can minimize damage. EMTs used a defibrillator to shock the heart and restart it. The sooner that happens, the better the chances for recovery. But even if we're successful in restarting the heart, we need to take extra precautions for his brain." Olga's heart skipped a beat. "That's where the coma induction comes in," Dr. Kumar continued. "We use medication to safely induce a state of controlled sedation, kind of like a medical coma. The purpose is to slow down brain activity and protect the brain from any further harm. When the brain is sedated, it doesn't need as much oxygen, and that helps it recover better." Olga's brow furrowed slightly. "So you're putting him into a coma?" "Exactly," Dr. Kumar affirmed with a soft smile. "It's a protective measure. We want to reduce the risk of any secondary brain injury that could happen after the cardiac arrest." Olga took another breath, feeling as though her own brain was going to explode. "And then we move to cooling," Dr. Kumar added. "We use a process called therapeutic hypothermia, which involves lowering Eugene's body temperature to slow down brain metabolism even more. This prevents swelling and keeps the brain from getting damaged by the lack of oxygen. It's proven to improve the chances of recovery, but we need to start it as soon as possible, within about 6 hours, for it to be most effective." Olga's mind raced with the new information. Cooling, a coma, it all sounded so absurd. "It sounds like a lot, but every step is designed to give Eugene the best chance," Dr. Kumar reassured her. "After cooling for about 24 to 48 hours, we'll start warming him up slowly to avoid any complications. The idea is to make the process as gentle as possible so his body can adjust gradually." She nodded, her eyes glistening with a mix of fear and relief. "And then, when he's stable, we will slowly reduce the sedation, and he'll start waking up. During this time, we'll carefully assess his brain function and check for any signs of neurological damage, Dr. Kumar explained. Rehabilitation will be important too, but the goal is to help him recover, whether it's through physical therapy or cognitive support. Dr. Kumar gave Olga a reassuring smile. This is a journey, but it's one that has a better outcome for patients who undergo this treatment. The MRI was done, and there was no visible brain damage. With the right care and time, Eugene has a good chance of making a recovery and will be with you every step of the way. Olga's voice trembled as she spoke. What are the chances? Will he be okay? I can't promise anything right now, Olga, Dr. Kumar said softly. It is only a 3% survival rate after that episode, but you literally saved his life. We're doing everything we can, and Eugene is in the best hands possible. She swallowed hard, trying to hold back the flood of emotions that had been building since the moment Eugene collapsed. Thank you, Dr. Kumar. I'm just so scared. I am alone here in America with our daughter. I understand, he said, offering a small, comforting nod. Take it one step at a time. We'll keep you informed, and we're here to support you both. Olga sat back in her chair, her mind filled with the details of what had just been explained. Section 2, Between Hope and Silence. She was led to a small private room, separate from the other families. It had no windows, no sounds, except those that seeped through the walls. Through those thin walls, Olga heard what grief sounded like when it was raw and unrestrained. A woman sobbing, a child's voice, small and questioning. She didn't see anyone else, but she could feel the presence of sorrow surrounding her like fog. The room itself seemed built for grief, quiet, sealed, and heavy. The social worker had approached her gently, her voice full of practiced empathy. She had invited Olga to talk, to share, to process. Olga looked at her, her expression calm, and said simply, "I'm all right." She wasn't, of course, but words felt unnecessary, even dishonest. She was thinking about God. Not in any practiced or religious way, but in the way people do when science seems to stop making sense. She wasn't praying, she didn't have those words, but she searched the silence, looking for something bigger, someone listening. Eugene, her best friend, her husband. They had attended the same school, sat in the same class at a gray Soviet school in St. Petersburg, neighbors who turned into lifelong companions. Even when he left for the U.S. after high school, they never lost touch. He would call her sometimes to tell her about new ideas, new foods, and life that moved at double speed. Olga stayed in Russia. She built her own life there, studied biology, and carved out a quiet intellectual path. But as she reached the midpoint of her life, something shifted. She realized she didn't just want a partner, she wanted someone who knew her, really knew her. When she visited Eugene years later, it was supposed to be temporary, but being with him again felt effortless. They laughed at the same jokes, finished each other's sentences, spoke with a shorthand built over decades. It wasn't just romance, it was trust, safety. Before she flew back to Russia to finalize her move, they got married. It wasn't planned, but it was inevitable. She was going back to those events in the morning. He had gotten out of bed to make coffee. She had heard him move around the kitchen. Then a strange sound, dull, sudden, the sound of something heavy hitting the floor. She ran. Olga rewound that scene in her head endlessly. He was on the kitchen tiles, unresponsive, cold sweat on his face. His lips started to turn a terrifying shade of blue. Her hands trembled as she called for help, tried to remember how to do CPR. Paramedics arrived, and now, here they were. He had talked to Olga about getting a dog for him to take on the morning walks just a few days ago. He had joked with Zoe about her messy room. He had kissed Olga on the forehead before walking out the door just yesterday morning. It seemed surreal, 1,000 years ago. He was young, just 42, almost healthy, full of plans. Yes, they liked good food. Yes, he enjoyed fast food now and then, and cola when she wasn't looking, but they were happy, active, curious. They went out to restaurants and loved discovering new places together. Life felt full. How could something like this just happen? She had believed in American medicine, in the systems, the machines, the expertise, and yet, in this moment, no one had seen it coming. Olga sat back in the cold hospital chair, wrapping her arms around herself, her eyes fixed on the narrow crack beneath the ICU door, waiting for someone to open it. She hadn't moved much, barely even blinking, caught in a fog of disbelief and exhaustion. The waiting seemed endless, her mind racing with the fear that she might never see Eugene the way he was before. And then, Olga glanced down at her watch. The numbers on the face were a reminder of the world continuing to turn outside of this small hospital room. "It's time," she thought, suddenly aware that she had to pick up Zoe from school. She walked slowly to the ICU desk. "When will he wake up?" she asked, almost afraid of the answer. "We'll begin reducing his sedation tomorrow morning," she explained, her tone steady but kind. "We'll start the process of warming him up then. You can go home for now and come back tomorrow." Olga nodded, the news both a relief and another source of anxiety. She wanted to be with him, to see him wake up, but her body was already trembling with exhaustion. She had to make arrangements for Zoe, and there were calls to make. With heavy steps, Olga walked out of the ICU, and the cool air of the hospital's hallway seemed to bring her a brief moment of clarity. She pulled out her phone, her fingers fumbling over the keys. She didn't have the energy for conversations, not now. She typed a quick message to Eugene's parents and close friends. "Eugene had a heart accident. He is in Palisade Hospital." Almost immediately, her phone began to beep uncontrollably, notifications flooding in from family and friends. Olga felt a wave of guilt, but couldn't bring herself to respond. She turned off her notifications, leaving only the ringer on in case of updates from the hospital. She couldn't afford distractions, not now. She picked up her daughter from school, moving like a programmed toy, going through the motions without really being present. She took Zoe home, made her a simple meal, and sat quietly in the living room, watching Zoe play with her toys. Zoe didn't ask any questions, her usual chatter completely absent, until it was time for dinner, bath, and bed. Zoe refused to sleep in her own bed and curled up next to Olga. Olga's eyes burned with exhaustion, but sleep refused to come. She cried quietly through the night, her mind unable to rest, caught between moments of drowsiness and waking. She felt the warmth of Zoe's body, heard the loud sound of her breath, and noticed that Zoe slept with her butt up for a significant part of the night, her legs jerking in restless movements. Olga snapped out of her sleepy haze when she felt a wet sensation in the bed. She moved Zoe to her own bed and started removing the sheets. She didn't feel rested, but she had to keep going. Olga walked to the kitchen to make herself a cup of coffee, but the horror of the previous morning settled over her like a heavy weight, the total darkness of the unknown stretched out before her. She got Zoe ready and took her back to the neighbor's house, asking Natasha once again to bring Zoe to school. With a final kiss to her daughter's forehead, Olga headed back to the hospital, her heart still heavy but determined to be there when Eugene woke up. Section 3, The Return. When Eugene finally woke, it happened faster than she expected. One moment, he was still as stone. The next, his eyes fluttered, blinked, and focused. It felt surreal, as if nothing had happened. He spoke almost immediately. "Where's my laptop?" Olga blinked. "Your laptop? I need to check something. There's a deadline." His voice was calm, too calm, alert but somehow detached. She reached for his hand. It was warmer now, the machines humming softer than before, but something felt off. "Eugene," she whispered, "do you know where you are?" He looked around the room, furrowed his brow slightly, then nodded. "Hospital. I guess I fainted?" She didn't correct him. In the hours that followed, Eugene became talkative, energetic even. But his energy had an edge, restless, misaligned. He began telling a story about a trip they had taken the previous fall, the way he got lost in a back alley trying to find the perfect bakery. It was charming, the first time. By the third time he told it, she could barely listen. And each time, the details remained exactly the same, same gestures, same laughter at his own jokes. Olga watched Eugene, her mind racing. And that's when it hit her. So many things had happened in the past, things she'd observed but had let slide. The way Eugene had seemed distant at times, or how he had forgotten things that were too important to forget, his absences at odd moments, his occasional confusion over simple tasks. After all, life had a way of making you move on, of filling in the gaps with routines and habits. Doctors had brushed it aside as stress, fatigue, or the kind of things that happened when you were just too busy. She realized those little things weren't just coincidences, they were pieces of a bigger puzzle. This was not just about Eugene. This was about his health, his mind. Something wasn't right, and she had to figure out what. She knew she couldn't rely on others to see it. The doctors had already dismissed her concerns. They hadn't seen what she had seen. But she had a biology degree. She had spent years learning about the human body, about systems that worked in intricate ways, ways that could go wrong in the most subtle, devastating of manners. She had read countless books, not just for school, but for herself, because she was curious, because she knew that the answers weren't always where you expected them. And the more she thought about it, the more she realized that the things she had observed could be the key to understanding what had happened to Eugene. "It's about saving my family, saving the life I thought wasn't so good, but looking back, it was almost perfect. But now I know, I need to fight for it." With sudden, sharp clarity, she pulled out her phone, opened the Notes app. Olga's mind briefly flickered to Darwin and Wallace, how they had changed the world by documenting the smallest details in their diaries, tracking patterns no one else had seen. Maybe that's how discoveries are made, she thought. By noticing what others overlook, she created a new page, Eugene's Health, Observations and Strange Events. That's when David arrived. Eugene's old friends stood at the foot of the bed, wearing that familiar half-smile of concern. He listened to Eugene's story politely, nodding along. Then Eugene started telling it again. David glanced at Olga. Her eyes met his, heavy with worry. The third time Eugene launched into the same tale, David interrupted, gently finishing the story for him. Eugene blinked. "Wait, did I already say that?" David nodded carefully. "A couple times." "Oh, huh." Eugene looked down at the blanket. "Weird. I don't remember." Olga's heart sank. She had noticed this before. In the past, when Eugene worked late into the night or had long stretches of poor sleep, he would become forgetful. Once he couldn't find his socks for an entire morning. Another time, he completely forgot about Zoe's dance recital, until 2 days later, when the memory came back to him, as if it had never been gone. At the time, she wasn't sure if he was joking or just distracted, but this wasn't the same. This time, it was immediate, repetitive, and frightening. She pulled out her phone and opened the Notes app. She needed to remember this, log it. Not for the doctors, for herself. She had a strange instinctual urge to capture this moment, to mark it. Eugene repeating story. Doesn't remember telling it. Doesn't remember events starting from the night before fall in a kitchen. Forgot Zoe's recital. Must track these. Then she looked up and stared at him, her Eugene, her partner in everything, and wondered how much of him had come back and how much still hadn't. Section 4. The Transfer. Olga tried to tell the doctors about Eugene's memory lapses. The way he was repeating stories, how he didn't remember anything from the evening before the collapse. She mentioned the moment with David, how Eugene was surprised to learn he'd told the same story 3 times. She brought up his confusion about Zoe's dance schedule, the socks, the moments that had come and gone in the past. But the doctors barely looked up from the monitors. "He's stable," they said. "The EKG looks better today. He needs rest. He's lucky to be alive." They didn't ask about memory. They didn't ask about sleep. They didn't ask what he had been like before this happened. Their focus was on the heart, the rhythms, the electrical signals, the medication levels. Amiodarone, beta blockers, anticoagulants, all vital, all critical, but not the reasons for his whole health picture. Olga and Eugene sat together in the small consultation room at Palisade Hospital. Eugene was lying back in a chair, still groggy from the sedation, his mind fogged by the recent events. His face betrayed a mixture of exhaustion and anxiety. Olga, ever the pragmatic one, was sitting beside him, her phone in hand. She opened her Notes app and began to take notes, feeling a sense of control over the overwhelming situation. Olga and Eugene sat together in the small consultation room at Palisade Hospital. "Olga, Eugene," Dr. Harris greeted them warmly, sitting across from them at a small table. "I understand this is a lot to process, but I want to explain how we can help Eugene moving forward, and I'll walk you through the procedure step by step. It's important to be fully informed, so you both feel comfortable. Eugene, what we're looking at here is an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, or ICD," Dr. Harris began, his voice calm and steady, a contrast to the rapid pulse in the room. "This is a small device we're going to implant in your chest. It's designed to monitor your heart's rhythm and give you a shock if it detects any life-threatening irregularities, such as what you experienced, something like ventricular fibrillation or tachycardia. He paused, noticing Eugene's tension. I know the idea of a shock sounds frightening, but it's important to know that this is life-saving. Without the ICD, you're at risk of sudden cardiac arrest, and we don't want that to happen again. Olga glanced at Eugene, noticing his clenched jaw, and gently placed a hand on his. She continued making notes on her phone, her mind racing through the logistics of the procedure. Dr. Harris gave her a small nod of approval before continuing. The ICD works continuously, monitoring your heart. If it detects a dangerous rhythm, it will first try to pace your heart with a small electrical impulse. This is low energy and is meant to fix minor rhythm problems. But if that doesn't work, the ICD will deliver a stronger shock to reset the heart. Eugene's eyes widened slightly, and his breathing became more shallow. He finally spoke, his voice shaking. The shock, how bad is it? Does it hurt? Dr. Harris took a moment, his face softening with understanding. I won't lie to you, Eugene. It can be uncomfortable. It's like a sudden, forceful thump in your chest, but it's over in a second. The goal is to stop the dangerous rhythm and allow your heart to restart normally. How exactly does the shock work? She asked, trying to understand the specifics for herself as much as for Eugene. Dr. Harris nodded. Let me show you. He reached for a model of an ICD on the table beside him and began to explain with a demonstration. This, he said, holding up a small device, is a basic version of the ICD. It's about the size of a matchbook. It gets implanted under the skin, usually here. He pointed to the left side of his chest, and it's connected to leads that go into the heart. It's always on, constantly monitoring your heart's rhythm. If it detects a dangerous arrhythmia, it will deliver a shock. He pressed a button on a mock ICD, and a small light blinked on it. This is the pacing function, he said. It sends a small electrical impulse, like a tiny jump start, to try and fix minor rhythm issues. Then he demonstrated a shock by pressing a different button. The light on the model blinked brightly, signaling a high-energy shock. This is the big one. It's like hitting the reset button on your heart. You may feel a powerful jolt, but it's over quickly. Eugene recoiled slightly, visibly disturbed by the simulation. Dr. Harris noticed but continued with empathy. I understand it's hard to imagine, but this shock is life-saving. It resets the heart's electrical system, allowing it to begin beating normally again. Olga looked at Eugene. She could see his fear, but she knew he needed to hear the facts. Eugene, we've been through a lot. This ICD is not just a device, it's your safety net. Think of it as a safety mechanism, something that can prevent the worst from happening. She paused, looking at Dr. Harris. How long will the ICD last, and what are the regular checkups like? Dr. Harris smiled, appreciating Olga's focus. The ICD will last for several years, typically around 5 to 7 years, before the battery needs to be replaced. As for checkups, we'll do routine follow-ups every 6 months to a year, where we'll check the device's function and make sure everything is working properly. It's simple and painless. Eugene was still quiet, processing everything. He looked at Dr. Harris and then back at Olga. The room fell into a quiet moment, the weight of the situation still heavy, but slightly more manageable. Eugene, Dr. Harris said gently, I know this isn't easy, but this device can really help you. It's not a cure, but it's a huge step in making sure you stay safe, and we're all here to support you through this process. Eugene finally nodded, his grip on her hand tightening just slightly. He wasn't fully at ease, but Olga's businesslike approach and Dr. Harris's calm explanation had given him a little more clarity. The road ahead was still uncertain, but they would face it together, with a plan in place. Dr. Harris took a deep breath and looked at both Eugene and Olga, understanding that the weight of the information was sinking in. Before we move forward with the implantation of the ICD, he continued, his voice steady but gentle, there's one more step we need to take. We need to confirm the exact nature of the arrhythmia that caused the cardiac arrest. For that, we'll be referring you to an electrophysiology lab at another facility. He paused, letting that sink in before proceeding. In this procedure, doctors will deliberately induce a controlled arrhythmia, essentially replicating the event that happened yesterday morning. They will stop your heart temporarily, Eugene, and will monitor it closely. This will allow us to confirm the exact issue with your heart's electrical system. Eugene looked up, his face paling. You're going to stop my heart again? Dr. Harris nodded, his tone reassuring. Yes, but this is a controlled procedure, and you'll be carefully monitored the entire time. Once they've confirmed the diagnosis, they'll immediately implant the ICD to prevent any further episodes. Olga squeezed Eugene's hand, sensing his rising anxiety, but she knew this step was crucial. Dr. Harris continued, "This procedure is necessary to ensure that we're addressing the correct problem and that the ICD will be effective." Olga nodded, taking in the information. As they finalized the details of the transfer, she quickly sent a text to Dr. Sokolina. Eugene will be transferred to Hackensack. They will implant the defibrillator there. Dr. Sokolina sat at her desk, reading the text from Olga. Her thoughts immediately drifted back to their last conversation. Olga had shared so many details, each one a small piece of a much larger puzzle, and now they weighed heavily on her mind. Eugene's memory lapses, his constant exhaustion, the snoring, it all painted a picture of something much deeper. Olga had even mentioned how they had started sleeping in separate bedrooms. It was better for her sleep, but she had acknowledged, with a hint of sadness, that it wasn't good for their emotional connection. Dr. Sokolina recalled telling her, "Research shows that 35% of American homes are now built with two master bedrooms. Perhaps it's becoming a trend. Women need quality sleep to function the next day, but it often comes at the cost of intimacy." The physical distance between them, combined with his exhaustion, was taking its toll, not just on Eugene's health, but on their emotional bond as well. Olga had also shared how Eugene would fall asleep anywhere, at his desk, behind the wheel of the car. She had even bought him a special travel mug for coffee to keep him awake during long drives, as his eyes struggled to stay open. His erratic sleep schedule, flipping from one cycle to another, only compounded the problem. There was no escape from the fatigue, no clear solution. Dr. Sokolina couldn't ignore the pattern emerging in Eugene's symptoms. This wasn't an isolated case. She had seen this before. Over the years, Eugene had experienced numerous dental emergencies due to clenching and grinding his teeth, a habit that had led to broken teeth and jaw pain. He was always surprised by how this happened, insisting he hadn't eaten anything hard. Dr. Sokolina had repeatedly explained to him, "It's not the food or chewing that's causing the damage, it's your activity before it." TMJ pain, sleep disturbances, and fatigue, these were symptoms that stacked up, each contributing to the bigger picture. And now, looking back at everything Olga had shared, it was clear. Eugene's condition wasn't just about one issue. It was the result of several overlapping problems that were finally converging into something much more significant. A gentle knock on the door interrupted Dr. Sokolina's thoughts. She looked up to see her assistant standing in the doorway. "Dr. Sokolina, your next patient is waiting," she said softly. A woman, mid-30s, elegant yet visibly fatigued. Dr. Sokolina smiled politely as she greeted her. "So tell me, how can I help you?" The woman shifted in her seat, clearly uncomfortable. "I want to align my teeth," Dr. Sokolina nodded, keeping her expression calm but focused. "Let's have a look at your history. Have you had any orthodontic treatments?" The woman winced. "Yes, I had braces as a child, but I didn't wear my retainer after they came off. Over the years, my teeth shifted back. I had clear aligners before my wedding, but my teeth moved again. I just want to fix it once and for all." Dr. Sokolina could feel the familiar pattern forming. "How many teeth were removed during your orthodontic work?" "Four teeth here and four wisdom teeth," the woman responded, pointing with her finger in the middle of her cheek. Dr. Sokolina asked her about her medical history. The woman replied, "I don't really have any medical problems, but I've been seeing an integrative medical doctor because I'm constantly tired and have trouble sleeping. I feel I am choking at night. The doctor ran a lot of tests, and we even did a sleep study." Dr. Sokolina stopped typing her notes, her gaze focused on the woman in front of her. The same story, four teeth removed, jaw pain, headaches, and now difficulty sleeping. A picture she had seen before. Her mind wandered back to Eugene again, the connection becoming clearer in her thoughts. She'd always believed that removing teeth in orthodontics could have unintended consequences, but now it was becoming a theory that needed exploration. "I understand your frustration. Crowding can make you feel like your work is undone, but there are solutions. we can use clear aligners to straighten your teeth again. Dr. Sokolina's tone was matter of fact, but inside, she was still processing the pattern, patients coming to her with the same story, the same set of issues. The woman looked up, frowning slightly. How long do I need to wear the retainer after treatment? Dr. Sokolina's mind flashed back to all the patients who had the same issue, teeth removed, alignment altered, the jaw shrinking over time. What happened to the human jaw? She thought. Why does it seem like more and more people are coming to me for orthodontic work and then needing to repeat it later in life? It's essential to wear the retainer for life, Dr. Sokolina answered, her voice firm. If you want your teeth to stay in place, you'll need both a fixed and a removable retainer. The problem is that when teeth shift like yours did, the foundation of your jaw has been compromised. Without constant support, the teeth will inevitably change position again. Her mind raced. Why is this happening so much now? Has the human race's jaw size decreased over time? Why are so many people struggling with this? She sat back, her fingers tapping gently on the desk as she reflected on these questions. Why was the jaw shrinking? And why did the need for orthodontics seem so universal now? The questions were flowing. Her patient's struggles were making her reevaluate the systems that governed not just their teeth, but their whole health. As she continued discussing the treatment plan with the woman, her thoughts turned to the upcoming meeting with Ina. The annual tradition of meeting for dinner had become a highlight in Dr. Sokolina's calendar. She could already picture the evening in her mind, the glamorous dinner at a chic restaurant, Ina in her usual polished elegance. Dr. Sokolina smiled softly to herself. This time, though, she had so much more to share, Olga's story, Eugene's case, and all the pieces of the puzzle she had been piecing together in her mind. She imagined herself slipping into a stylish, abstract patterned dress with a deep blue hue that would complement her eyes perfectly. The high-heeled stilettos would add just the right touch of confidence. It would be one of those rare moments where she could take off her dental scrubs and let her mind wander beyond the clinic walls. She was eager to talk to Ina, to discuss the evolution of human health and what might be causing these new patterns. Ina would understand her concerns, and maybe, together, they could find some answers. As she wrapped up the conversation with her patient, Dr. Sokolina felt the familiar weight of both anticipation and curiosity. She couldn't wait to hear Ina's thoughts on Eugene's story, to dive deeper into why these health patterns were occurring so frequently. It's not just about the teeth, Dr. Sokolina thought. It's about everything, the entire body, its evolution, and how we've changed over time. She would dress up so soon, feel the thrill of anticipation, and share her growing concerns with someone who understood. But for now, Eugene's case lingered heavily in her thoughts. But just as she was about to close her computer, an email from Olga popped up, the subject line reading, "I found something interesting." Dr. Sokolina's curiosity piqued. She opened the email quickly. Olga had attached a link to an article. Dr. Sokolina scanned the opening lines, her eyes narrowing as she read about a connection between irregular heart rhythms and certain symptoms that Eugene had been struggling with for months. The more she read, the more unsettled she felt. Could this be the missing link? The puzzle pieces were starting to fall into place, but something about this new information felt like a revelation. She couldn't shake the feeling that the answers she had been looking for were just within reach.